With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Farm families say the math no longer works with prices down, cost up, and trade uncertainty widening the gap. So the American Farm Bureau Federation pressing Washington for immediate and longer-term help. In letters to President Donald Trump and congressional leaders, Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall warns that shuttered farms drain rural schools, elevators, Main Street businesses, and ultimately America's food independence. Farm Bureau cites crop prices that fell off a cliff since 2022 and a persistent ag trade deficit, heightening volatility around China and other partners. Short-term, Farm Bureau urges bridge payments before year-end robust enough to stabilize cash flow while policy resets. Longer-term, it's calling for enforceable trade deals, year-round E15, restoring whole milk in schools, protecting interstate commerce, investigating major input pricing, stronger competition enforcement, and prioritizing American-grown fruits and vegetables in federal and institutional purchasing. The message, preserve farm capacity now or risk deeper losses that take years to rebuild. Rural lenders say a fix to the Community Bank Leverage Ratio, CBLR, could unlock more credit for farms, small businesses, and hometown projects. Congress created this back in 2018. It was a simple optional capital test, but regulators set it at 9% and layered on big bank definitions, limiting who could use it. Speaking at the Federal Reserve's Community Bank Conference, Fed Governor Michelle Bowman called the rule well-intentioned, but underperforming. Only about 40% of eligible community banks ever opted in. Far fewer among institutions over $1 billion. Now, for ag communities, that means more capital tied up on paper, fewer dollars available for operating lines, land notes, equipment, and grain storage. According to the American Bankers Association, industry advocates argue regulators can fix this without new legislation. They can lower the threshold to 8%, raise and index the $10 billion size cap so more true community banks qualify, and stop penalizing banks for holding safe assets like cash and treasuries in leverage calculations. They say those targeted changes would expand participation, give rural banks more room to lend without weakening safety and soundness. Well, with export growth unlikely to absorb bigger U.S. crops, next leg of demand for corn and soybeans? Biofuel policy. That's according to a recent Kansas City Federal Reserve Economic Bulletin. It notes U.S. yields are up more than 20% since 2010, while America's share of global corn-soy trade has slipped amid competition from Brazil and ongoing trade frictions. Proposed renewable fuel standard updates would lift biomass-based diesel quotas about 50%, while bumping ethanol and advanced volumes and counting foreign feedstocks at half the rate of North American inputs could favor U.S. crops. And this is Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
As part of our broader campaign to modernize illicit finance regulation, FinCEN and the bank regulators are hard at work on a new rule to define the requirements for an effective AML-CFT program.
Speaking at the Federal Reserve's Community Bank Conference, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
My expectation is that a proposal will recenter supervision where it should be on the effectiveness of a bank's AML-CFT program. I likewise expect that proposal will position FinCEN as a gatekeeper for AML-CFT enforcement. This will be a significant departure from the past with its zero-tolerance focus on process, documentation, and wide latitude for supervisory expectations and judgments that are not always consistent with the law or our national security priorities. A focus on higher value activities will also better serve our law enforcement and national security objectives. These are all important victories, to be sure, but much work remains to be done. Where do we go from here? Going forward, Treasury will continue to drive reforms to improve regulatory tailoring, refocus the culture of supervision, and modernize our illicit finance regulation. Specific priorities will include reforms to the rating system, new processes for monitoring examiners' compliance with supervisory policy, mechanism for independent appeals of supervisory criticisms, coordination to avoid duplicative examinations by different regulators, and review of the core platform providers, including contract terms that prevent community banks from innovating for the future. For community banks to go back on the offensive, we need to take a closer look at the dynamics that have undermined the community bank model and work to fix them. To that end, as I have said before, Treasury is focused on ensuring that modernization of our capital framework ends the capital arbitrage that drives bank lending to non-banks. This will likely entail reduced capital requirements for large banks on mortgage loans, investment-grade corporate loans, and some other important exposures. We must therefore ensure parity by giving smaller banks at least the option to benefit from these reduced requirements. Treasury has also supported congressional efforts to modernize the deposit insurance framework. I'm encouraged to see emerging bipartisan support for increasing FDIC insurance limits on non-interest-bearing transaction accounts. In addition to these efforts, Treasury has taken an informed and careful approach to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Any actions on the GSEs must not increase borrowing costs and must preserve what works in the current system. That includes the prohibition on volume-based discounts for large lenders, as well as the cash window and other features that preserve equal secondary market access for small lenders. Now, allow me to close with a call for action. Before President Trump took office, community banks spent decades on the defense. But under President Trump's leadership, the game has changed. The playing field will be even more even. The ball is in your hands again. What happens next is up to you. So my advice, go on the offense, retake market share, chase after customers, champion technology, leverage the new regulatory landscape to your advantage, and expand your role in the American economy. The community bank comeback will help pave the way for America's golden age. Recognize the outsized role you play in this effort and embrace it. Because if you lead the way, Main Street will follow.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Beginning in late 2020, renewable diesel production expanded significantly in the United States.
University of Illinois ag economist Joe Jansen.
Renewable diesel offers advantages over traditional FAME biodiesel because it can be used in existing diesel engines without modifications, making it attractive to fuel companies and regulators focused on reducing carbon emissions. The growth in renewable diesel production created substantial new demand for soybean oil, which became one of the most common feedstocks for renewable diesel. More soybean oil demand has an obvious response. Build more crushing plants and process more soybean. And that's exactly what many companies started doing. Soybean oil production, which has steadily increased over time, kicked into overdrive as new crush plants came online. Since October 2020, U.S. soybean oil production has been 23 million pounds per month above long-run trend. However, soybean processing presents a challenge. When you crush more soybeans, you produce both soybean oil and soybean meal in relatively fixed proportions. Increasing oil production traditionally meant crushing more soybeans, which also increased meal. But what if meal demand doesn't keep pace? Building more crush capacity takes years to build new facilities, costs hundreds of millions of dollars, and you still end up with this soybean meal surplus problem. One solution is to wring more oil out of the crushing process. While industry benchmarks operate on established assumptions about extraction rates, one bushel of soybeans yields 11 pounds of oil from every 60-pound bushel, 18.3%. Long-run trends indicate a shift towards more oil, less meal, and less waste from the crush process. But recent data suggests these trends became stronger during the renewable diesel boom. We analyzed monthly data from the National Oilseed Processors Association and found notable changes in oil extraction rates. Starting in late 2020, coinciding with renewable diesel growth, soybean oil extraction rates began consistently exceeding historical trends. The data shows extraction rates increased from about 19.5% to consistently reaching 20% or higher. Since October 2020, soybean oil extraction rates have been on average 0.2 percentage points above the long trend. While this appears to be a relatively modest change, the scale of soybean processing means these improvements translate into substantial additional oil production. To put this in perspective, in July 2025 alone, processors crushed 11.7 billion pounds of soybeans. The observed 20.0% oil extraction rate was 0.4 percentage points above long-run trend. This additional oil meant an extra 44 million pounds of soybean oil from the same amount of soybean. Our research aggregates these impacts and finds approximately 30% of above-trend soybean oil production since October 2020 was the result of improved oil extraction efficiency, rather than processing additional soybean. In the early part of this period, when crush capacity growth was more constrained, all these new crush plants had yet to come online. This effect was proportionally larger. Squeezing more oil from the crush is a significant part of the industry response to increased demand. Rather than relying solely on expanded capacity, processors have found ways to optimize existing operations and extract more value from the same raw materials. This efficiency improvement raises important questions for the industry's future. We note that recent EPA rulemakings may drive further growth in renewable diesel production. Processors will consider the potential for further extraction optimization and capacity expansion. There are likely physical limits to how much additional oil can be extracted from a soybean. However, understanding the scope of additional extraction improvements and the timeframe over which they can occur will be important for industry planning and for market price dynamics.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about Cotton Research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Earlier this year, I called for a fundamental reset of financial regulation.
Speaking at the Federal Reserve's Community Bank Conference, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
No longer will regulation serve to entrench big banks and empower Washington bureaucrats to the detriment of community banks and the clients they serve. President Trump and this administration have charted a new course for our economy, one that strengthens both the shop floor and the trading floor. This is what I call the era of parallel prosperity, where Main Street and Wall Street grow together. Who will turn this vision into reality? The men and women in this room. Community bankers are laying the foundation for America's golden age, one loan, one family, and one small business at a time. My job as Treasury Secretary is to make it easier for you to do your job. To that end, we have worked hard for the first 8 months of this administration to empower community banks to take back control of their own future. This morning, I will discuss why the Trump administration has sought to empower community banks, how we have done it, and where we will go from here. First, why? Community banks are essential to America's heartland. They provide the capital that binds small towns together. Community banks make the charitable contribution for the new playground. They make the loans for small businesses, farmers, and first-time homebuyers. They employ local leaders and teach financial literacy in our schools. Parallel prosperity, as I mentioned before, is the idea that Main Street and Wall Street can grow together, and community banks play an instrumental role in driving growth on the Main Street side of the ledger. To expand opportunities for all Americans, the banks that serve Main Street must have the same chance to succeed as the banks that serve Wall Street. But the post-crisis regulatory framework has instead become a threat to the community bank model. Since 2010, we've lost 3,600 community banks, a reduction of over 45%. Community bank share of bank assets have fallen from 23% to 15%. Their share of outstanding bank loans has fallen from 27% to 20%. Their share of outstanding bank CRE loans has fallen from 52% to 41%. This represents an acceleration of trends that predate the 2008 financial crisis. And in a disturbing new development, de novo chartering has dropped precipitously, averaging just 6 new banks per year since 2010. For comparison, in the years prior to 2008, there were 100 plus new banks chartered each year. The post-crisis framework has left the trail of destruction in its wake by reinforcing the larger economic dynamics that have hollowed out the American heartland while enriching the money centers in coastal cities. To be clear, the financial crisis underscored the need for new regulations. The purpose of Dodd-Frank was to end too big to fail, but it ended up creating too small to succeed. These new regulations entrench the dominance of the largest banks by rewarding economies of scale and necessitating effective lobbying operations here in Washington. What followed was a community bank bottleneck that left America's hometowns reeling. President Trump and this administration have seen what the heavy hand of government has done to community banks and the families you all serve. And he has set out to fix it. Why? Because we know that the Main Street revival starts with a community bank comeback.
It's Agriculture Today.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
In the past 3 years, we've been dealing with all kinds of diseases across the dairy industry, both in the U.S. and EU.
Director of Dairy Marketing Insight for StoneX, Matt Donay.
In the U.S., we've had novel things like bird flu showing up in the dairy cows for the first time ever. Now, luckily, bird flu here in the U.S. hasn't been much of an issue this year. But the new concern is around the New World screwworm. This is a parasitic fly that lays its eggs in open wounds of warm-blooded animals. And now this is a little bit graphic, but the eggs hatch and then the larvae effectively eat their hosts. The screwworm used to be endemic to the southern half of the U.S., so we've dealt with this before, but it was eradicated from North America back in the 1970s. It's now making a comeback. It's come back up through Latin America, and it's been found just 70 miles south of the border between Mexico and the U.S. So there's a decent chance that it makes it into the U.S. From the experts that I've read, they think it's a 50-50 chance that it eventually makes it into the U.S. What impact it will have on milk production if it does get here is really hard to say. It depends on how widespread it becomes and what measures we have to treat it. The other issue could be that the government puts into place restricted movement zones where cows and cattle cannot be moved around the U.S. as easily as they typically are. And that might be an issue for the industry as well. So there's fears, there's legitimate fears. But it's really hard to say what impact it will have if it makes it here.
And what is the impact of trade and tariffs?
A customer asked me a very similar question earlier this week. They said, what have been the noticeable impacts of the trade wars this year? And or what impact have the trade wars had? And frankly, it's really hard to point to any real large impacts. We did have some month-to-month volatility. When China put an additional 100%, more than 100% tariff on U.S. dairy imports, we did see U.S. dairy exports to China collapse for a month. But then when China dropped those additional tariffs, we saw U.S. exports to China surge. We also have a little bit of a strange anomaly with butter trade flow statistics between Europe and the U.S., where we're probably going to see some strange movements in butter import numbers for the U.S. But if you zoom out and look at things at an annual level, it looks like U.S. imports will probably be a little bit lower than they otherwise would have been since the U.S. has had additional tariffs on our imports. And our exports might be slightly lower than they otherwise would have been just given the uncertainty around the trade policy. But there isn't much in terms of massive noticeable impacts at an annual level. And in fact, when you look at some of these commodities, our cheese exports, U.S. cheese exports are going to be record high this year. U.S. casein exports look record high. Our butter exports, they're not quite going to be record high, but we're talking about 100, 200% increases in butter exports thanks to very cheap U.S. cheese and butter prices this year.
He looks at the outlook for dairy.
From a long-term perspective, the U.S. population grows about 1% per year. Per capita dairy consumption grows by about 0.5% per year. So if U.S. milk production is growing at about 1.5%, the rule of thumb is that's a pretty balanced market. Over the last couple of months here, U.S. milk production has been growing over 3%. And with the expansion in the dairy herd that we've seen, we're probably going to continue to grow over 3%, at least through the end of this year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Today I'd like to visit with our dairy producers concerning setting their heifers and young stock up for success as we go into the fall.
Kansas State Dairy Specialist Mike Brook.
You know, this time of year as we start to see the temperature swings and we start to see some health issues in our baby calves, one of the things we really need to pay attention to is how have we really set those calves up for success. And, you know, a lot of that actually starts with the nutrition of the dry cow. So as we think about those mama cows that are standing out there in pens waiting to have a calf for us this fall, how is their level of nutrition? Very, very important in terms of making sure that we have high-quality colostrum for the calf that she is going to have. Now, speaking of high-quality colostrum, one of the things I often find missing in our calf program is a measurement or determining what the level of immunoglobulins are in that colostrum. You know, as we look at research data, about 20% of the colostrum that is produced by our cows may not actually have adequate levels of immunoglobulins. So if you really do not know what the level of immunoglobulins are in that colostrum, you're really just taking a guess. You can have everything right in the program, including the amount that you're feeding and the timing of that, but if you actually do not know what levels are, it's really hard to say whether or not you've actually fed the calf enough immunoglobulins to result in effective passive immunity. So what is the easiest way to do that? Well, there's various things you can use to test the level of immunoglobulins in the colostrum. One of the probably easiest is actually the Brix fractometer. It's a device that can actually be used for several things. It can be used to test the level of immunoglobulins in the colostrum, but it can also be used to check the level of protein in the serum after the calf is born and we're checking for effective passive transfer. So when you're thinking about what you should be looking for if you are using a Brix fractometer, you should be looking for a Brix reading of at least 22%. And the higher the better in this case, but we need at least 22% on that fractometer to have adequate levels of immunoglobulins in that colostrum. Now, another thing, if you purchase this device, which is not really very expensive, you can also use it to check whether or not the calf actually received effective passive immunity. We do that with a simple blood sample. We generally do this when the calf is about 7 days of age. You don't want to do it too early. You don't want to do it too late. And we check for the level of total protein in that serum of the blood sample. So blood samples can be separated easily on your farm. And again, you can use the Brix fractometer as a way to measure that. So what are we looking for as we look at the level of passive immunity that we'd like to see based on a Brix level? Well, anything greater than 9.4% when we're talking about serum collected from the calf would be what we would actually ideally like to see. If we're anything above 9, we're doing pretty good. As you drop below that, you get into the fair range. And if you drop below 8.1% on those serum samples, that indicates that we're not doing a very good job of passive transfer with the calves. Could be from a variety of reasons. Keeping 9, we'll always see a low percent in general. We'd like to see less than 10% that would fall into that poor category.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.